Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world
from
news
Washington,
headlines.
VOA News. I'm Marty Johnson reporting. A bomb exploded outside Yemen's presidential palace today, just one day after Shiite rebels formalized their takeover of the country. At least three people were wounded in the blast. The attack came as thousands of people took to the streets in several Yemeni cities, including Sana'a, protesting the Shiite Houthi rebels' takeover. A Kenyan lawmaker has been shot and killed today in Nairobi, along with two of his bodyguards and the driver. George Muchai of the Kabete Party was returning from a family gathering when his car came under fire. A police officer said the killing was carried out execution style. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta said he was deeply shocked and saddened by the killings. Opposition leader Raila Odinga denounced the death of the legislator, saying it was part of a wider pattern of political violence and insecurity in the country. Jordanian fighters and their jets struck Islamic targets for a third straight day today, as the Islamic State militants claim that a Jordanian airstrike killed an American hostage remains unconfirmed. Jordan launched the raids in revenge for the killing of a Jordanian pilot by burning that the Islamic State group captured in December in Syria. The United Arab Emirates said Saturday it ordered a squadron of F-16 fighter pilots to help Jordan with the airstrikes. State news agency WAM carried the announcement. U.S. officials said Friday they could not confirm Islamic State's claim that the airstrike had killed the female aid worker held hostage by the group. She was identified by her family as Kayla Mueller, kidnapped in 2013. And security officials in Iraq say bombings in Baghdad have killed at least 34 people and wounded scores of others this weekend, a series of three. This is VOA News. U.S. Vice President Joe Biden says the United States wants a peaceful solution in Ukraine, but says the United States will help Kiev defend itself against Russia if necessary. In a speech Saturday at an international security conference in Munich, Biden said Russia's President Vladimir Putin has repeatedly vowed to work for peace, but instead delivered tanks, troops and weapons to the conflict. Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko also spoke, displaying several Russian passports that he says were collected inside Ukraine's borders from Russian soldiers. French President Francois Hollande says a French-German peace initiative currently being discussed with Russian President Vladimir Putin is one of the last chances to end the fighting in eastern Ukraine. German Chancellor Angela Merkel arrives in the U.S. Sunday to discuss the proposition with President Barack Obama. VOA's Daniel Scharf has a preview.
A Kremlin spokesman described Ukraine peace talks Friday between French President Francois Hollande, German Chancellor Angela Merkel, and Russian President Vladimir Putin as constructive and substantive. Dmitry Peskov indicated no new deal was reached after 5 hours of closed-door private discussions in Moscow, but he said they agreed to work on a September ceasefire drawn up in the Belarusian capital Minsk that has been routinely violated. Based on proposals made by the President of France and the German Chancellor, he says, work is underway to prepare the text of a possible joint document on implementation of the Minsk agreements. Daniel Scherf, VOA News, Kiev.
Meantime, the annual security conference in Munich, one of the world's largest gatherings of political leaders focusing on security issues, opened this weekend with stark warnings over the current climate of threats. British Defense Secretary Michael Fallon raised the current situation in eastern Ukraine and the threat from the Islamic State group as particular threats to Western European countries.
These are very direct threats to us. The aggression from Russia is a direct threat to NATO. The threat from ISIL is a threat to our streets, the streets of Paris, of Brussels, of London, and even the resurgence of Boko Haram is in the end a threat to North Africa and the southern flank of Europe as well. So these are direct threats to the European part of NATO, and it does mean that we have to shoulder a larger part of the burden.
The Munich Security Conference runs through today and into tomorrow. A colorful Paul Gauguin painting of two Tahitian girls is sold for a record-breaking price of nearly $300 million. Media reports say the 1892 painting, which in French translated to English says, "When Will You Marry?" has been reportedly purchased by Qatar and a museum there. Unconfirmed. I'm Marty Johnson reporting from Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Crotty in Washington.
This is a sad day for the Jubilee Coalition, because he was a member of the Jubilee Coalition and also a member of parliament from the Kiambu County.
A top Kenyan parliamentarian condemns the killing of a colleague and demands an investigation.
The most important outcomes of the bilateral consultation today were that President Mugabe called in his Minister of Finance, Patrick Chinamasa.
Zambian President Edgar Lungu visits African Union Chief and Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe, who have details.
We now have 24 countries in Africa who have laws that criminalize the performance of FGM, and also in 12 industrialized countries.
And the World Health Organization demands an end to female genital mutilation. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The majority leader in the Kenyan parliament has demanded security agencies launch a thorough investigation into the shooting to death of a lawmaker at the Central Business District in the capital, Nairobi. Parliamentarian George Muchai of President Uhuru Kenyatta's ruling Jubilee Coalition was killed Saturday along with two of his bodyguards and driver at 3 a.m. local time. Majority Leader Aden Duale told me earlier that the killing deprives Kenya the services and contribution of one of its finest parliamentarians.
Honorable George Muchai, the Member of Parliament for Kabete, at the outskirts of Nairobi, constituency outside Nairobi, was shot dead this morning at 3 a.m. In the Nairobi Central Business District, plus two of his bodyguards and his driver. And this is a sad day for the Jubilee Coalition, because he was a member of the Jubilee Coalition and also a member of parliament from the Kiambu County, the county where President Uhuru Kenyatta comes from. So the coalition has lost one of its best members of parliament. The country has lost a leader. Honorable Muchai was one of the finest trade unionists in our country before he joined politics.
Some people have called for increased protection for lawmakers following this recent act of violence perpetrated by Al-Shabaab militants. What is your take on that?
I think it's not only for lawmakers. I mean, the Jubilee government administration is under obligation to protect the lives and the property of each and every of the 41 million Kenyans, and also to provide more security for the top leadership of our country, which, as I speak to you, our members of parliament, our governors, our senators, our top leaders, both in the executive and in the judiciary, enjoy a scaled-up security. And, of course, this is an isolated incident. It looks like it's a well-coordinated attack and killing on one of our colleagues, but I'm sure the National Intelligence Service and the other arms of the security will make sure that each and every member of parliament or leader in our country is safe, just like all the other citizens of our country and their property are safe. So this is an obligation on our security agents, but this is the first of its type since the new parliament was formed in the last 2 years.
Now, Honorable Duale, critics of the government are saying this is yet another proof that its security measures has failed and that the government has failed to protect people, and now a lawmaker has been killed. by assailant. What do you say to such criticisms?
Let me make it very, very clear that since December, we the country has enjoyed a sense of security and stability. And what has happened today is not an isolated incident, not only to Kenya and to Nairobi. Incidents of attacks against leaders has happened in many, many places. It is not only isolated to Nairobi. It can happen in Washington. It can happen in New York. It can happen in London. It can happen in Dubai. But it is the obligation of the government of the day to make sure that all the 41 million Kenyans, including our leaders, are safe and sound. And I'm sure the security agents are on the heels of the perpetrators of this heinous act. And sooner or later, the killers of Honorable George Muchai and his three aides will be brought to book. That is what we are demanding from the National Police Service as the leadership of the Jubilee Coalition and as a member of Parliament.
Honorable, as a leading member of Parliament, what assurances will you give Kenyans? Because I heard the shooting death of this lawmaker has sent fears or shivers down the spine of a lot of Kenyans, especially in the capital, Nairobi. What assurances will you give them at this very unfortunate time?
Of course, the death of our, or the killing of our member of Parliament has sent a lot of fear among the people of Nairobi and the country as a whole. And I am sure the men and women who are in charge of our security agents are on top of everything. And we want to assure the country that our security apparatus will make sure that the killers of the Honorable Member of Parliament are brought to book, and the security of each and every Kenyan, more so for our members of Parliament in their residence, in their offices, will be upheld.
Aden Duale is the majority leader in the Kenyan Parliament. He spoke with me from the capital, Nairobi. Zambia and Zimbabwe are seeking to strengthen diplomatic and bilateral relations. This following an official state visit by newly elected President Edgar Lungu to the neighboring Southern African country. According to the Zambia Presidential Press Secretary Amos Chanda, the two leaders agreed to strengthen the existing economic bond between Harare and Lusaka.
Yes, the trip was a tete-a-tete call with President Mugabe because he's a chairperson of the Southern African Development Community, SADC. So President Lungu was making a traditional tete-a-tete call that newly elected presidents make to the sitting chairperson of SADC. The most important outcomes of the bilateral consultation today were that President Mugabe called in his Minister of Finance, Patrick Chinamasa, who explained to Zambia that they were grateful that the joint projects to increase power generation capacity on the Zambezi River, the Batoka Gorge project and the Kariba North Bank power generation capacity, that Zimbabwe is riding on the back of Zambia in terms of raising international finance for the projects.
There are issues about the economy the president said will help jump-starting Zambia's economy. Was this discussed, and will this strong bilateral relations that these two leaders seek help and put some energy in Zambia's economy?
Yes, President Mugabe announced that Zimbabwe had raised enough finance to build the rail line from Bedbridge that is on the border of Zimbabwe and South Africa, through Zimbabwe up to Chirundu, that's a border town between Zambia and Zimbabwe, that there will be a rail line that will be constructed. That will reduce the journey, the train. I think the current rail line that goes through to Zimbabwe goes through Livingstone. So if it comes through up to Chirundu border, I think that rail line into Zimbabwe will be 300 kilometers shorter. So that's a project that President Mugabe announced to his counterpart, President Lungu, that Zimbabwe will soon embark on. So what Zambia will do is to get a rail line from Kafue. Kafue town is 50 kilometers out of Lusaka. It will come through Kafue to go and join the rail link at Chirundu. So this is going to boost the existing cooperation. There's a one border stop, a joint border clearance facility at Chirundu, which has increased the clearance of trucks coming from Zimbabwe into Zambia significantly. So the border connection by rail will be one other major bilateral initiatives that will improve trade relations between Zambia and Zimbabwe and the countries further south, including South Africa.
How will Zambians benefit from this trip?
Very beneficial. For instance, there is another project. It's a tripartite arrangement, Zambia, Zimbabwe, and Botswana. There's a Kazungura Bridge project. That is going to improve the movement of goods and services. That is going to improve transportation communication systems between and among the three countries. So it will cut journey times. It will reduce significantly how long it takes for goods and services to reach. So there will be increased economic activity and therefore increased trade, therefore increased revenue for people in the border towns where the economic activities are taking place. Over and above infrastructure development, communication is one of the biggest problems, road, rail, and water transport. So these will increase quite significantly. So quite clearly, that will benefit the people of Zambia because it will have improved economic ties. Therefore, it may result in direct revenue by the Zambia Revenue Authority and other institutions.
What would you say has been the relations between Harare and Lusaka following the election of President Lungu?
The Zimbabwean colleagues told us that they are very pleased that the transition went very well and that the elections were peaceful, and they are happy that President Lungu was elected. They want a closer cooperation between the ruling party in Zimbabwe and the ruling party in Zambia. So they are very, very satisfied that President Lungu won and Zambia remains united.
Amos Chanda is the Zambian Presidential Press Secretary. He spoke with me from Mfuwe in Zambia. Zimbabwean ruling ZANU-PF activist blocked the official groundbreaking ceremony for the construction of an Asian-funded $40 million state-of-the-art mall. The activists also said they did not want white investors in their suburb. Correspondent Evan Chafera of the VOA Zimbabwe Studio 7 service has details from the capital, Harare.
For more than 30 minutes, Councillor Matinyanya and some ZANU-PF supporters mocked and harassed the senior council officials led by town clerk Tendai Mahachi, who had gathered for the official groundbreaking ceremony for the proposed Mpezanamo Upmarket 2 in Harare Simbare high-density suburb. They threatened to beat up Movement for Democratic Change councillors, including Mayor Bernard Manyenyeni. Local Government Minister Ignatius Chombo was expected to officiate but did not turn up. Matinyanya threatened to assault the MDC councillors in the minister's presence. Matinyanya and his group forced Mahachi to call off the event.
I think we try to do it next week on Friday so as to make sure that he can participate in this one. So that is what is there, but he will give us some time, enough time to make sure that we prepare. I'm sorry for the delayment.
Thereafter, Matinyanya and the toy-toying ZANU-PF activists chased away people who had gathered for the event, who included officials from some three Asian countries. They could not be drawn to comment about what they were doing, as they threatened to beat up anyone who was not a ZANU-PF supporter. Asked to comment, Mayor Manyenyeni said, what happened today is regrettable and unnecessary.
It's most unfortunate. We are an inclusive city. We encourage everybody to be here.
At the same time, Councillor Herbert Gomba, who chairs the council's business committee, said it was said that some people were politicizing a project meant to create thousands of jobs.
It's unfortunate. The intention of this council is just to create employment, to help in the development and the growth of the economy. And it's unfortunate that some people are getting in between.
Asked whether Matinyanya would face disciplinary action, Deputy Mayor Thomas Muzwa said it was up to his ZANU-PF party to deal with him.
We don't have to fight him here in the council or to discipline him as the office of the mayor or as the office of any council, but to tell him that, that what we are doing is wrong. We will tell your party will deal with you.
The project, which is a joint venture between Harare City Council and Consortio International, is expected to provide the local community with 5,000 flea market stores, 67 small shops, supermarkets, secure parking area, an eating area, a commercial center with banks, office space, and sports facilities. Some economists who spoke to Studio 7 said such behavior was against the government's agenda of creating employment and empowering citizens. Former Minister of Finance Chief Economist Masimba Manyanya said this should never be allowed to happen again in Zimbabwe as it discourages foreign investors. In 2012, ZANU-PF activists blocked a $5 million construction project in the same suburb, which was proposed by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The project was moved to Tsvaresekwa high-density suburb. During the same year, they also blocked a $1.3 million fuel project proposed by local businessman Alex Mashamanda and another $30 million scheme to upgrade Mbare Musika bus terminus. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Opposition political parties in South Sudan are criticizing the recent power-sharing deal signed between the government and the armed opposition led by former Vice President Riek Machar. The opposition leaders say the deal only reaffirms previous agreements. For VOA News, Charlton Doki reports from the South Sudanese capital, Juba.
The opposition leaders say after all the death and destruction during more than 13 months of fighting, the recent power-sharing agreement signed by President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar offers nothing new. At a Juba News conference today, David William, the political party's leadership forum information secretary, read a statement prepared by the opposition parties saying the two sides spent too much time discussing, quote, how to divide the cake, unquote.
The last four sessions have been discussing nothing but positions. Who takes what position among the warring parties, and for that the two principals were the ones conducting the hard negotiation. The root cause of the current devastating war are brushed aside as if or remain president, prime minister or vice president. The burning issues of corruption, atrocious crime, critical reforms of governance, economy and in the security sector are brushed aside.
The statement also lashes out at the Intergovernmental Authority on Development mediators, accusing IGAD of, quote, jumping from one position to another without good reason, unquote.
On 24 August 2014, they came up with the president-prime minister formula. Recently, in their proposal of the 27th of January 2015, which formed the basis for the ninth session of the talks, this was changed to a president and first vice president format, adding to the confusion that obtained already. As if this was not enough, they introduced a regional element into the equation when the talks have all along been between political parties and entities.
The IGAD proposal creates the position of a first vice president who is above the current vice president under the scenario of a transitional government of national unity. IGAD mediators also proposed that the vice president, as well as speaker of the National Legislative Assembly, must be individuals from South Sudan's Greater Equatorial Region. SPLM-DC leader Lam Akol Ajawin says the agreement should instead address the core issues that led to the fighting in the first place and lay out how to move the country forward.
This is why we are against this regionalism. We want to solve the problem. And we are also not for position now. We want the issues to be discussed, the issue of reform in the security sector, in economy, in everything.
William says it was wrong for the government and IGAD mediators to bar other political parties from participating in the negotiations.
The two parties arrogated to themselves to lump together the political parties and the former detainees, two distinct stakeholders, and give them 10% in power sharing.
Opposition party leaders say, without addressing the root causes of the conflict, any agreement reached in Ethiopia will, quote, just be a temporary truce for the war to break out once again, and this time more ferociously, unquote. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
February 6 was International Day of Zero Tolerance to Female Genital Mutilation. The World Health Organization, or WHO, joined a chorus of other voices in demanding an end to this injurious procedure still widely practiced in the developing world. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Female genital mutilation, or FGM, is a dangerous procedure that can cause severe physical problems, including complications in childbirth, maternal deaths, heavy bleeding, and infertility. It also can result in psychological and sexual problems. The international community considers FGM to be a gross violation of human rights of women and girls that has no health benefits for the victims. Despite increasing calls for its elimination, the practice, also known as female circumcision, remains widespread. The World Health Organization reports more than 125 million girls and women have been subjected to FGM. The practice is especially prevalent in Eastern and Western Africa, some parts of Asia, and areas in the Persian Gulf. WHO says the highest rates are found in Somalia, Guinea, Djibouti, and Egypt. WHO coordinator and senior advisor Lale Say says FGM is increasing in Europe, the United States, Australia, and Canada because of migration. She notes that more countries are banning the practice.
There is encouraging increase in the political support to end FGM. We now have 24 countries in Africa who have laws that criminalize the performance of FGM. And also in 12 industrialized countries, there are strict rules that criminalize sometimes the family members, but most importantly, health professionals to perform FGM.
Dr. Say says FGM is falling substantially in countries such as Kenya and the Central African Republic, but she acknowledges that while many laws criminalizing FGM are on the books, they are not being implemented. The procedure, which predates Islam, stems from cultural and traditional beliefs that value a girl's virginity. It is widely believed that FGM reduces a woman's sexual desire, thereby retaining her purity for marriage. Ironically, the Ebola epidemic has put a temporary halt to FGM in West Africa, where it is widely practiced. Andrew Brooks, the regional child protection advisor for the UN Children's Fund, tells VOA he does not know whether the temporary ban in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone will become permanent.
I could say in Guinea there are kind of opposing tendencies. On the one hand, about a third of the girls that were cut, it would take place in the health centers, usually by the midwives, but because of people's fear and kind of resistance to the health system, that level of the practice would have gone down because people were less going to health centers.
Brooks suspects the dangerous rite will return when the Ebola threat recedes. He says much effort will be needed to make the temporary ban sustainable in the long term. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll continue our collaboration with Channels TV as we examine the election process in Nigeria. Is the political playing field leveled? What's being done to ensure a peaceful, free, fair, and transparent vote? That's next time on VOA Africa.
Next on Let's Talk, join host Sande Shumari and his guests discussing love between the young and old couples. This light-hearted show discusses topics of your interest with some hilarity. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. Then we'll have commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University.
Personally.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy what we have for you today.
I promise you go home, you won't tell daddy. I give it to you like you never had it. Screaming, judging, like speaking Chinese. Now waiting me this. Pack a boom boom. Now waiting, I see. Saga, cause she know one day. She talks, so she know one day. I know go lie. The things within my mind. When I see you dancing, girl, you got me high. And if you wanna try, make a good day tonight. Cause I'm in the mood, as long as you're feeling the groove, I deal with you.
Personally, personally. Personally, personally.
I go deal with you.
Personally, personally. Personally, personally.
I go deal with you.
Personally, professionally. I see what you're doing intentionally.
Get me wanted physically.
So give it to me radically. Emotionally, psychologically. You're turning me on biologically. Sexually, dramatically. And she talks that she know what
I know go lie. The things within my mind. When I see you dancing, girl, you got me high. And if you wanna try, make a good day tonight. Cause I'm in the mood. As long as you're feeling the groove, I go deal with you.
Personally, 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 personally,
I go deal with you.
Personally, 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 personally,
I go deal with you.
Yeah, exceptionally, the reason is spiritually, money speaking so drastically, magically, internationally, Abba, habatically, grammar, not for dictionary, saga, but she know one me, she talks that she know one me.
I know what I, this is within my mind, when I see you dancing. Mr. giving you all you need. Oh yeah, sorry what that, sister sorry what, sorry what that, open you up, sorry what that, oh what you are. Baby go down money go low. Sorry what that, sister sorry what, sorry what that, open you up, sorry what that, oh what you are. Baby go down money go low. Sorry what that, sister sorry what, sorry what that, open you up, sorry what that, oh what you are. Baby go down money go low. Sorry what that, sister sorry what, sorry what that, open you up, sorry what that.
Mr. DJ, what are you saying? Put this on a replay. After this one, put it back on replay. If you're feeling this one, let me hear you say. Stash on the beat, double bass, killing this. We don't count with the queen, we don't count for the street. Count with the twist, let it dance with your hips. Sense on the scene, now tell them what you think.
Hey, she raised.
Bob Mandina, the dance floor. DJ, why you never ask for? Playing that song and then they ask for. Ask for, ask for. On Monday night, they dance floor. DJ, why you never ask for? This is the song and then they ask for. Ask for. I say, oh, girl to girl, oh, man to man. We don't hold on hand to hand. Fine body girl, let me BBM. Fine for me, girl, make a BBM. Sexy girl, see me with them like Titanic when I sing with them.
Tonight.
Yeah.
What you trying to do?
I'm rolling with you, daddy.
Oh, yeah? You gonna roll with me? Alright, yeah, let's go. What is this?
Come the Jones like a Indiana. Mm-hmm. Hey, You never seen her before, I guess. You never seen the way that she wanna dress. You never seen her dip it down low, spin her body like a turntable and suck her dress. I know you wanna know how she goes down low and the rhythm take control. I know you wanna know why she got me trapped in a limbo. That's what it seems. I wanna control it, girl. But anytime when she come around, she get this feeling where they do me like fever. And when she dance with my mezebu, he dey be me like Senna for Fana. Me like how she play the bass line, it makes me sing ooh la la la. The way she do, the way she dat, it makes me sing ooh la la la. Oh yeah. When mommy come back, she a jump. Daddy come to me a cross. And when they ask me, it was me. That's what me talk say. I don't like this shirt, touching body. What? But no say, my mama no like them. I don't want this shirt touching body. Boxer. Cause you know say my papa don't like them. Boxer. Listen up. Oh na 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 na. Na 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 na. Oh na 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 na. Na 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 na. Oh na 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 na. Na 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 na. Oh na 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 na. Na 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 na.
And that was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. It's now time for commentary and analysis by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University here in Washington. Hello, Dr. Nyang.
Hello, Africa. It's always a pleasure to share my reflections on American policy towards Africa. While doing that, I pay close attention to African opinions on and attitudes towards the United States. So every week, we look at the headlines and what people in the social media are saying or talking about Africa. This week, the major issue that is going to attract the attention of the world is Ukraine. Ukraine, and the manner in which the Western powers are negotiating with Russia. And, of course, the consequences of that conflict for Africa is very much like the consequences for Americans, Russians, Western allies, and the people of Ukraine. It is all the question of state relations between one state and the other. What is important for Africa in terms of African opinions on and attitudes towards the United States is Africans who are watching events right now in Ukraine will remember what happened during the Cold War when Khrushchev was from there, and Khrushchev really was the leader of the Soviet Union at that time, and African interest was very much linked to American decisions over Cuba. Now that Cuba is on the headline, U.S.-Cuban relations is in the headline. Ukraine has some relationship with African countries. The economy is not doing very well, but they were dealing with some of these African countries. One could imagine a good paper on the Ukrainian side or the American side or the African side, African-Ukrainian relations. Of course, during the Cold War, there are many African students who study in Ukraine. There must be many memories of people who are listening to us right now, who are Africans who study in the Soviet Union and were in the Ukraine, and they have their own memories of those days. So when the issue comes up, you begin to talk about state relationships. And state relationships are very much evident in Africa. Big power versus small power. The relationship between Eritrea and Ethiopia is a good example of the same narrative. Because Eritrea broke away from Ethiopia, just like Ukraine, after the end of the Cold War, broke away from the former Soviet Union. So if you are looking at American policy towards Africa, you want to see to what extent small countries breaking away from bigger ones, like South Sudan, and the manner in which South Sudanese independence, they worked very hard for it, but unfortunately, they were not able to remain united. The same dilemma in South Sudan exists in the Ukraine. Of course, there is an ethnic question between the Russians, who are now trying to reaffirm Russian hegemony over Ukraine, and there are other ethnic groups in Ukraine who have different agendas. You come to South Sudan, and you see that America played a very important role in the independence of the South Sudanese. Of course, to the strong opposition of Sudanese nationalists from the north. And that problem of interstate relations between African states and their neighbors and other countries elsewhere in the world. Right now, Ukraine becomes a big issue. You used to have the problem of Serbia during the Clinton administration, and it has consequences all over the world. So when you talk about African opinions on and attitudes toward the United States, the problem in Ukraine, the problem in South Sudan, the relationship between Eritrea and Ethiopia, and of course, it goes on and on. Now, a new development is beginning to take place, and this is going to call for American intervention, American role, or French role, or American French role, dealing with Boko Haram. The Chadians, the Nigerians, and the Cameroonians are all involved in this conflict. So you see, you can see the new game in international politics, that you have a wound in a big country like Nigeria. Unfortunately, the Nigerian military is shamed in African politics today. We did so well in Sierra Leone. They had the Sierra Leoneans and Liberians, but lo and behold, they have a wound that is so dangerous that even small countries like Chad, Nigerians used to look at Chad and say, when Gaddafi went to Chad, you see, Nigerians could have gone to Chad and helped them. Just what they did on the Babangida and Abacha, they were able to go and help those Sierra Leoneans and Liberians when they had their civil war. So to put the whole discussion to an end, American policy towards Ukraine, American policy towards Sudan and South Sudan, these are issues that people are going to lose. But there are fundamental differences in terms of American policy. That's why the National Security Advisor and the President of the United States have made it categorically clear that when we look at the situation in Ukraine, we cannot talk about boots on the ground. We don't want to go back to 61. When you have Castro, Young, with Che Guevara and others, during that Cold War, a very dangerous moment in the history of the United States, we survived that time. Now, cooler heads have to prevail. Those Russians, those Ukrainians, and those Westerners must learn to be cool, because we cannot afford any kind of confrontation, because egoism, nationalism, souvenirism are going to be dangerous. Now, of course, in Africa, the Africans, unfortunately, they don't have any kind of dangerous weapons that can really destroy the whole Africa. Just like Pakistanis and Indians have the same situation. The Israelis and the Arabs have the same situation. The Iranians and the Israelis, people have to be cool to deal with one another. And this is one of the reasons why diplomacy must be given high marks. We have to be very diplomatic at this point. So when you talk about the African states, Boko Haram, it's a shame for the military in Nigeria. It's a shame for the lack of political leadership to make sure that people are able to avoid the loss of life. Thousands of people are being killed in northeast and part of Nigeria today. And those girls are still missing. So this becomes very serious with regard to how U.S. policy is pursued in Africa and how you're trying to balance sanity, political hygiene, and political sagacity in the development of human relations and the way it is today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nyang. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America and from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Nelson Lopez. We say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders in Sierra Leone say, when you raise a leopard, you shouldn't be upset when it eats your goat. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
ISIL, or as it is also known, Daesh, continues to pose a serious threat to the region and the international community. But the counter-ISIL coalition has made significant gains in blunting its momentum and continues to push forward in its effort to degrade and ultimately defeat these terrorists. As U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said in Davos, Switzerland, the international community must act as one in countering the extremist threat. And the place to begin is quite simply by defeating Daesh. The reason to go after Daesh first, said Secretary Kerry, is because they are better armed, better trained, better funded, and have been more able to hold onto territory than any other terrorist group in history, because they directly threaten the peace and stability not of one group in Iraq, but of every single country in the region, and because they have further overtly threatened to take their threat around the globe and are working to do so. Already, efforts by the United States and the international community have paid off. Just 4 months ago, Daesh was trumpeting plans for seizing Baghdad. But then two things happened. In Iraq, a new government was assembled that is intent on reform. And second, an international coalition of 60-plus members committed to disrupt, degrade, and ultimately defeat Daesh. The United States is deeply involved in leading both of those developments with help from Arab friends, European allies, and others from across the globe. Since September, as part of a comprehensive strategy, the coalition has launched some 2,000 airstrikes, disrupted Daesh's command structure, undermined its propaganda, squeezed its financing, damaged its supply networks, dispersed personnel, and forced them to change tactics. Today, in much of Iraq, Daesh's momentum has dissipated, and with coalition support, Iraqi forces have retaken territory and put Daesh on the defensive. And in Syria, Daesh has seen its command facilities attacked, its oil infrastructure damaged, and has failed in its attempt to control Kobani. No large Daesh unit can move forward aggressively without worrying what will come down from the skies now. The rise of violent extremism poses a challenge to the nation-state and the global rule of law. Our collective future, said Secretary Kerry, will be uncompromised by the primitive and paranoid ideas of terrorists, but instead it will be built by the universal values of decency and civility, and knowledge and reason and law.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.